Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Ryan Chukin here with co-host Todd Embley. How's it going, Todd?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks, Ryan.
And we have David Chen from Strikingly.com.
I'm giddy.
He was awesome.
He was amazing. Yeah, that was awesome. What a path.
Yeah, wow. So unique.
Yeah.
In his own decisions.
A local Chinese guy who not only quits Goldman Sachs, but also quits university.
Yeah, and sends
gets away with it.
Sends a letter to his parents, like a long one, explaining why this is the right path. He's got to find himself. Response, radio silence.
Exactly. And then co-founder, did it work? I think so. Can I use it? Okay. Sends the same letter to his parents too. I don't know. Anyway, it's genius. Yeah, so many good things, guy. How he started, where he came up with the idea, what led him to do all the pivots, and how they stumbled upon it as a side project that ended up becoming the big project. University of Chicago, and then gets into Y Combinator on his second try, not his first try. Yeah. And then comes to
and his attitude shift.
Yeah, and everything. Second. He just keeps moving. Yeah. Right. I don't get into Y Combinator. We should move to the Valley. Yeah, that's what normal people do.
Yeah,
we and then they get in the second time. Okay, we should go back to China and then go to Beijing. And then, oh, Beijing's not working. Let's fake moving to Shanghai and see if it's easier to hire there. Oh, it is. Okay, now let's really move there. You know, it's just great. So awesome stories.
Everything. I mean, the pivots, the lean style. He was doing lean startup before lean startup with a thing.
Yeah, it exactly.
It's just incredible.
Okay, so.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's listen. Enjoy. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. Of course, you know who I am. I'm Todd. I'm here with, what's your name again? What do you say? Beard guy?
Ryan.
Ryan. Shukin. Yeah, Ryan guy that's always on the other side of the mic. We got a great episode today. We were lucky enough to get somebody who is kind of famous in our world. He went to a very famous accelerator. We'll get into that later. He does choose to be based in Beijing. Nobody knows, or based in Shanghai, even though you were in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And now, Ryan, you're going to give a bit of a background here, right? Okay.
So we got David Chen, CEO of Strikingly here. But before that, he went to Chicago University in 2008, and he was the VP of your student body. And that transitioned really quickly into your first startup, your first year in the university, which was MoneyThink. And then after that, you did some work at Goldman Sachs in Hong Kong. And then after that, you did Excel in Shanghai, which is really interesting because right after that, like, you're just chain starting all these startups. And then right after that, you do a startup called JoinStart that didn't actually go according to plan, but it did help you build Strikingly, which is massively successful now.
Yeah, Strikingly.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Congratulations on Strikingly. It's an amazing product. Use it all the time.
Yeah.
We've been in touch for quite a while now. It is. It's amazing. And it came actually. So We do something. We're recording this on a Friday. We do something called the group therapy for all the startups in our program. Every Friday, they have like 10 minutes to go off.
They definitely need it.
Yeah. And actually, Strikingly was really coming up. And it was funny because they're like, yeah, you know, there's this thing, Wix. And then everybody went, oh, Wix, gross. And then, you know, they were like, Strikingly. And then it was like, yeah, Strikingly, that's the one. So that was good validation, actually, just from our group.
That's great.
You guys
Thank
are
you.
Kicking ass.
Always welcome any feedback.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the Strikingly predecessor.
Sure.
Yeah. So let's talk about where did that come from? You know, what were you experiencing? What was happening? What was the problem you were trying to solve? Well, you know, where was the pain point, and where did you discover it? How did you discover it?
Sure. So, I mean, the exact problem of why it fell at the end was that we're not trying to solve any problem. I mean, that was one of the mistake that we made, which I think a lot of startups actually make these days. Like, people, when they're trying to do a startup, they make, which is they start with an idea instead of like starting with a problem.
Yeah.
And that was what we did with the first one. So that was, quick flashback. It was like in 2010. I was in like my third year in college. Like mentioned before, I was in Goldman Sachs doing my internship, and I realized that wasn't really something for me. That was sort of like the status quo for like going into banking. And like,
young,
you know,
Chinese, bright kid.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. Well, my father even like put up my, you know, acceptance letter on the wall and I frame it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, that one is, of those things, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah. So, there's a, it's quite interesting how that goes. So you can imagine when I said I'm not going to go back to banking. Mm-hmm. And later on, I sort of like, you know, even left school. My parents were just like, yeah, cool. We're just going to disown you.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Went from just like, yeah. You know.
So
like,
that kid was a failure. Yeah. Do we have anybody else lying around?
Let's get another one, you know. So after that internship, there are a lot of things came out of that internship as well. I realized something that didn't necessarily fit in. It was a great industry. I really enjoyed it as a, you know, as something that you do, as a hobby or something that you just like enjoy doing for like a summer. But then, I sort of just knew that there wasn't something I could excel in. I will plateau very soon if I go down that path. So that's why I kind of like, you know, left that industry. And then around that time, I was thinking about like things that I could do next, like that's not banking. And I realized that, when I was in, when I was participating in this one event in Singapore, I was like, you know, they were talking about all of this idea of like, they want to inspire entrepreneurs, build up the infrastructure of helping entrepreneurs and stuff. And I was like, and their idea was like, we're just going to dump in like 45 million or something like that, Singapore dollars, for building up this ecosystem. Hmm. And my thought was like, that's dumb. Right. That doesn't solve the fundamental problem. You have to build up the support network or somehow like inspire the people to do things themselves.
Absolutely.
And I thought back, I was like, wait, hold on a second. So I was in student government. I was in charge of this one committee, which is the funding allocation committee. So we appropriate funding to different student organizations per like every year. We have something like $1.5 million that we can actually, you know, allocate. Mm-hmm. And there was actually never enough money for people to do stuff around. A lot of things are very interesting. And particularly, there are like very, you know, kind of out of the box stuff that people are doing that we couldn't fund. I was like, hold on. Every single organization has something like 30 to 40 people, right? And if every one of them chipping like, say, $10, that's already enough for, you know, doing whatever they say they want to do.
Yeah.
Why don't they just do that? And that was the start of JoinStart. So you can see the thing. You join something, you start something.
Yeah, here we go.
And and the idea was a crowdfunding idea. But remember, this was back in like 2010, where like around that time, Kickstarter and Indiegogo were just getting some notice.
Yeah.
It was 2011 when they really truly take off. So back then, there was not even a word called crowdfunding. We're sort of just like, you know what, like let's try to solve this problem for people. So with my kind of like student government power, I sort of like force every one of like those student organizations, like you have to use this platform that we're building to like, you know, kind of apply for funding. And we started this like initiative called the Uncommon Fund to fund stuff that's like just startup type of stuff. Yeah. And all of those ran really smoothly. We have something like 150 projects launched in like 2 weeks. With like more than 500
50 projects in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks. And and more than 500 people kind of like joined this entire thing. But then that quickly fell off.
Why?
Because like, you know, what we realized was that people apply for funding because the funding is there already.
Oh.
It's not because they needed it. We never did any user validation of like, you know, what like would you actually want the funding? Yeah. Like what
you
would you do?
You weren't gonna deliver it in tranches, like you know, upon deliverable, if
there wasn't requirements and
exactly like that wasn't something that we do. And quite frankly, back then I was like, yeah, like what you mentioned, I was like in banking, I was in like, you know, a good university. I was like, customer support is like so below me. Like I don't want to do any customer survey, talking to users. Nah, that's not something for me. And that just translates into failure, right? Like you know that it's gonna translate into failure at one point.
Yeah.
For us, we didn't do that. We sort of just like went with this mental model of like this idea of work. How cool is it, right? It's going to be the next NASDAQ. It's going to be like great. It's going to be like, you know,
NASDAQ.
Right, exactly. You think
a little early.
but we thought about, well, you still hear that pitch today, right? People launching crowdfunding stuff. So eventually people start kind of like falling off, like nobody was using it anymore. And that translates to the internal team of like people lose faith in what we're doing. So we started with like 5 people, and then 3 people quickly just like, you know, I don't believe in this product anymore. I don't believe in you, and startup sucks, right? It's not like that was a year when
you delivered so much funding already.
Right, we did. But, you know, at the end, like nobody was like retaining, like there's no retention to the product. There's no people coming back. Like they use it for once and they bounce.
So you like saturated that market.
Yeah. And you saturated in one sense, but like people just don't need it. You know, frankly, they just don't need it. And there's no momentum. And running a startup for the first time was just really unclear, right? So for us, a lot of people sort of expected the social network type of like you jump into a swimming pool, you like you have like, you know, you go to parties with a lot of like hot girls, and you meet with investors, you do this type of things, right? You do podcasts.
Yeah.
But that was not the case. So people start losing faith in like both the lifestyle, the direction, and like what we're doing.
It's like an expectation issue as well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, startup has this kind of like charm in a sense, like this mystery of like startup has like this very interesting kind of lifestyle.
Well, I mean, okay, first day in China Accelerator, definitely we tell people how it's gonna be.
That's exactly.
It's gonna be hard, and you're gonna fight for this.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we didn't realize. So what that translates is that we realized there's a lot of things that we should have done, we have never done, and I eventually let go of 2 of my best friends, that was really tough. We started talking to users. So when we started talking to users, we realized a lot of things that just invalidated all of our assumptions.
Wow.
One thing that we learned was that they don't need funding. And particularly, I asked them the question. I was like, hey, how can we help you with you know, crowdfunding better? And the answer we got was that, oh, we don't need funding. I said, are you kidding me? Why would you use a platform that's for crowdfunding that but you don't need funding at all? Like, oh, the funding existed. That's why we apply. Mm-hmm. And also, you kind of force us to apply this way. I'm like, okay.
Don't you remember? You put a gun to my head.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't remember that?
You never asked me. That was interesting. Then I sort of started asking them. I was like, you know, but, you know, some of them were still using the platform a little bit. I still see some traffic on a daily basis.
Hmm.
So I asked them, I was like, so how can we improve it? You know, well, all of the startup actually have some value. They can deliver, but they just need to discover that. So we asked them, like, you know, what we can do to improve this platform to make it better. And the answer we got was like, oh, if you can make the profile page look so much better, that will solve all of our problem. I was like, what's that problem? I was like, oh, we can then start sending it out to people, telling them this is what we're working on, rally people around it so that we can get people sign up, and we can send it to our sponsors and whatever. I was like, wow, that's interesting. So can you send me anything that you think you want to have? Like any examples of, you know, what type of profile page you want to have? And all they sent us was like this type of mini websites. And I was like, okay, so that was an entirely different, you know, product, entirely different demand. It's much more for marketing, much more for branding compared to for funding. And it's much more for like, you know, they need to use it to like, you know, show their legitimacy to build up their presence online, then like they need to use it for this very particular angle of like getting more fundraising. And that's where we, you know, that's when we realized that was the true problem. And that was a problem I facing when I was in college as well, when I was running for student government, when I was running, you know, MoneyThink, my own nonprofit, when I was running any like events on campus. I always needed this, you know, needed this one friend to build some mini sites for me so I can promote it. I was like, okay, so that was my problem. And somehow we validated that was also the problem from people around us. So why don't we do that? So we started a side project, and that side project was Strikingly. So, and we never expected that to take off. We actually started that side project and we launched it as a side project as well. We spent 2 hours building that landing page. The first project, we spent 9 months coding like a ton of hours, but this one other side project, we spent literally 2 hours building that landing page, rolling out. What that means is basically we just like spam all of our friends on Facebook, and ask them to like, hey, share around if you feel that it's interesting. We'll be working on the side project. Not a line of code for the actual product. We just make a sort of fake promise saying that like we're working on this.
Yeah.
In 1.5 weeks, we have 800 people sign up with like zero marketing, nothing besides spamming our friends. And that was more than we were able to get in 9 months.
This is just lean startup 101 here.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
And that was the time that lean startup methodology kind of launched with their first PDF.
Were they were they watching you?
I don't know. Like, you know,
did they hear you say invalidating our assumptions?
Because that's pretty spot on.
You're pretty much reciting the book at this point.
We probably should have written that as well.
Yeah.
but that was a great experience that we kind of like did it that way, and then we realized, looking back, I was like, oh, there's a methodology called lean startup methodology. And
full circle.
Yeah. And we got all of those users, and then we started talking to those people very aggressively compared to our first one. We basically do everything opposite to, you know, how we did our first one. We talked to a bunch of them and realized exactly what we need to build as version 1.0. And we started doing exactly like that. Like every single version we rolled out, we figured out the problem. We know they already told us they needed that very urgently. They will pay for it stuff. And then we start building up those features and stuff. So all of our efforts of like executing becomes much more laser focused.
I love it. It's so important because like Todd says, and these lean startup events, and when people are there or these startup weekends, people come and they pitch solutions. And Todd, they talk about pitching the problem.
Yes, that is a bit of a pain point for me. I don't find that they're run that well. I want to see 30 people get up and pitch a problem that everybody in the crowd can feel an empathy towards and then go to start working together on that solution. And the problem is when people get up and pitch solutions, you want to join that team. Now you have to deal with this guy whose ego is now attached to the solution that won the opportunity to pursue the weekend and have people join his team. And now, you know, now he's going to try and be the leader and try to fit everybody into his idea of how this solution should look and act and feel. And
That the ego thing really jumps in quickly when you focus the conversation on the solution. Because then it's like very subjective view of like whether it works
or not. Right.
But when you focus on the problem, then you take that entire kind of like subjectiveness out
doesn't
of the
matter.
Conversation.
You're a builder.
Exactly. Like
the market will tell you what the solution is as long as you ask them.
And talk to the consumers, they'll tell you what they're willing to pay for.
Yeah. Exactly. So if things work, it works. If things doesn't work, it doesn't work. You at least have a common ground, which is that, do you agree with the problem?
Yeah.
If you agree with the problem, that's fantastic. I mean, you don't need to have people agree with your solution.
Now you get a commitment to the team.
Yeah.
Because you all want to do the same thing, and that's solve this problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so, it better be your own problem.
Yeah. You should have some, you know, that's the thing. You should experience it deeply and have a passion to solve it because of some experience or lot of experiences. Let's fast forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Strikingly becomes the thing. Now this is what you're doing. Okay. And you're back at University of Chicago by now?
Well, actually, after the failure of the first startup, I sort of just left school.
Screw school.
Well, I mean,
that's totally normal.
I mean, for me,
when
though,
you fail, you quit school.
Just keep going down that path, right? Yeah. Until you burn.
Mom and dad are not crying enough at night.
Well, actually, we I have an interesting story there as well. So,
do tell.
Asian parents are very against, you know, this kind of risky path, right? For a lot of Asians, you kind of like, you feel it. And my mom and dad was already open-minded, but they were still very against me doing this. They're like, why don't you do 2 years of banking and stuff? So to convince them, I actually have to write a like long form email. It was a numerous calls and then, you know, kind of like all concluding this like long email that basically tell them, hey, don't like, I know you're trying to keep me at this like, you know, greenhouse, like, you know, trying to keep me from all of this like, you know, troubles out there or like potential failures. But that's exactly what I want to experience. I mean, I want to experience life that way without your protections, stuff like that. And I wrote that long, long email, I sent it to them. My partner asked me like, did that work? I was like, I guess so, because they never contacted me again. And then my partner was like, well, forward me that email. I'm going to send it to my parents as well.
No way.
And then his parents doesn't really talk to him for quite some time as well. I'm like, okay, great. I guess like we successfully sabotaged that relationship as well.
Crowdsource letter of letting your parents know you're dropping out of school.
Yeah.
I imagine the conversation of your parents. It's like, what'd you do to him? I'm like, what'd you do to him?
It was your cooking. That's what it was. Okay, so I think that's a very interesting thing. I think it also translates down into also when you're trying to hire.
Yeah.
You know, totally. I mean, how, I don't know. You're a good person to talk to about this. You know, and you know, the locals, mm-hmm. not everybody. We know there's mm-hmm. always, you know, an exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the whole, I think that it's actually quite difficult for local Chinese young people to break out into entrepreneurship.
Mm.
Not only were they not really raised to understand the world around them, mm-hmm. which then they can't experience pain points. Mm. You know, they've never worked. You know, they've never really had the opportunity to make as many decisions. And if you can't do that, then you can't make bad decisions. And then bad decisions always teach you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, even obviously in some of the cases where parents are choosing what you study at school and who you marry sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. A very, very difficult case. What do you think? I mean, is this somewhat true? Is it changing rapidly? Is it changing slowly? Has it changed already?
I mean, still case by case, like what you said.
Yeah.
But the general thing is like, you know, it's much more risk averse. But with all of this initiative, like all of the money, you know, kind of like, you know, going into a startup, it becomes more of a sexy thing to do, right? That's for sure. And I guess that's good side and best side to it. But yeah, I mean, I think what's truly lacking here, you know, is the education system really promotes like conformity towards one ideal. Mm-hmm. Like there's something that's good, something that's bad.
First or you're last.
Right. In the US, I remember it's much more about independent thinking and critical thinking, mm-hmm. right? You want to be who you are instead of like you want to be who everyone expect you to be. And
a balanced person.
Yes. And that's a very subtle but like fundamental change of like how you perceive the world and mm-hmm. perceive yourself. So instead of like thinking about I want to own this much, it's like I want to experience more. I want to actually, you know who I am instead of like being told of who I should be. Like all of those like start to change. So I think mm-hmm. like having that independent thinking, having that, you know, gut to actually say that this is who I am, this is what I want to do, this is something that I believe in strongly, regardless of what everyone says, mm-hmm. is quite important. And that determination really is quite at the foundation of like whether you can actually, you know, persist through the startup journey. And I think, you know, and it's tough. It's really tough. Yeah. Even with all of those, I mean, I'm fortunate that I have like two co-founders who can like carry me up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just like, you know, I wouldn't have only just one data point or like one kind of like voice in my head telling me like do something, not do something. There's always people picking me up. So having a team, having a startup team, you know, people that can actually count on really matters a lot. And I think those are the things that has changed in China.
Okay.
The perception of like you can do a little bit more. Parents see more possibilities given like all of like resources going around.
Yeah.
More people coming back from abroad. People study abroad. The you know there are more diversity in the cities and stuff like that.
You're even a role model now for a lot of people. They can look at me like, look, David did it. Look, well, mom, like it's possible.
But the fact remains is that you still have to go abroad.
Yeah.
To be able to achieve a certain mindset, it's still not here.
Well, it's definitely. I mean, I think the openness is definitely like improving a lot for sure. Especially in major cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people actually travel abroad as well. People actually see the world.
Starting to.
Yeah. So we see a lot of local entrepreneurs doing fantastic work. So I wouldn't say that this is the only like kind of a broad thing, but. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, part of the reason why this is hard for anyone is that it requires so much of like independent thinking, so much of like saying no to conventional wisdom, saying no to like people who are around you who truly believe in you and care about you, who wants to like, you know, make the best decision for you. And you just have to say no to like you know, their perspective of the decision making process. So so you know, it's still hard, and still like only, you know, there are people who are just meant to do it more so, I guess. Everyone can try this, but really, like, you have to develop that kind of sense.
Yeah. And I mean, there's this little kind of cartoon picture in my head with, you know, you've got like an American, you know, mom and an American kid. Yeah. And the mom says, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And he says, "I want to be a doctor." And then you've got below, you've got the Chinese mom and the Chinese kid. And the kid says, "Mom, what am I going to be when I grow up?" Mom says, "You're going to be a doctor."
Yeah. That's
race car driver for me.
Okay, missing the point.
Astronaut.
But anyway.
Yeah. But that's something that when I was in the U.S., I actually experienced one thing that it really kind of defines a lot of my experience when I was in the U.S., which is I was asking, like, you know, this application, like this admission officer from like top universities, right? That's all I care about when I was in high school in the U.S. And I was like, how can I get into your school? And the answer was like, "Oh, just be yourself." I was like, "Oh, thank you very much. That didn't answer my question at all." I mean, what am I supposed to do? And
what do I do with that?
Yeah, I'm like just come on, like, just tell me something specific. And but the insight was so strong, and they would be like, "Yeah, I mean, if you can't even know how to be yourself, how can I tell you?"
I'm like,
"Oh, thank you. That still doesn't tell me anything, but I guess, like, you know."
Yeah, but the point probably resonated.
Exactly. So you start thinking about those. I mean, you got encouraged to think about more of those. Yeah. I think the environment still is very important. It just takes more discipline to, like, break off the norm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, you know, trying to do things like the way you want it to be.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of environment, that's a great segue. We're going to jump into the break. And when we come back, you've been in some a very unique environment at YC in the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And then the environment that you chose when you came back to China. I'm interested to know the Shanghai over Beijing choice.
Exactly.
We'll get into that when we get right back.
Hey, we would like to thank our sponsor, China Accelerator, for supporting us in our podcast. They are all about supporting entrepreneurs and the community, and this is what we really care about. They are the number one accelerator in China, basically the force to be reckoned with in the East, and they help people bring ideas into China globally and also help companies inside of China grow globally. I was in China Accelerator Batch 5 from personal experience. I can tell you the value that they bring to an idea, a team, a startup. And it's something that is something that you really want to look at when you're looking at accelerators, the mentor network and the quality of the team, the individuals, and the passion that the team has to help you and your idea grow. And China Accelerator absolutely excels in all these ways. And so you can find out more at ChinaAccelerator.com.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, People Squared. You know, big shout out to Bob Jung, founder of People Squared, you know, who got this up and running about 5 years ago. He's always been extremely supportive of entrepreneurs, which is why he ended up doing this after he had an exit and put together all these spaces. They've got a couple of new spaces now. They've got one in Zhengjiang and Hongqiao. They're putting together really interesting spaces, which is just for artists where they can actually move. It's out in the sticks, you know, quite a ways outside of Shanghai. But you can actually move out there and live out there for a certain amount of time, almost in a bit of a commune kind of way. And lots of artists can get together and, you know, great place for those that are coming traveling. If you're an artist traveling through China and you want to go on a bit of a retreat and meet with other local artists and enjoy some quiet time out there, that's a great place for you to do it. We just love everything that People Squared stands for, because they're all about community and they're all about support, and they really get to know and understand all of the startups that are part of the community that is People Squared. You know, other places they might throw, you know, some free beer around or you know, have showers or some things like this. People Squared just cares. They have a great community, they have great people, and they're going to do everything they can to help you, is, you know, from giving you good internet in China, which is hard to do, to introducing you to amazing investors or even helping you find talent to join your team. So shout out to People Squared and Bob Jung for supporting us, but more importantly, supporting entrepreneurship in China.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Here with David Chen, CEO of Strikingly. We we're just about to get into something that I think is really interesting. Tell us about your experience at Y Combinator. What was that like? And what did you guys achieve?
How'd you
there?
Get in?
Yeah, how'd you get in?
Well,
what's the secret?
Well, I'm actually going to write a blog post about it because I received that question quite a bit.
Bear in mind that we do work at China Accelerator, which is an accelerator.
I'll transform that blog title to how do you get into
that's right.
accelerators.
No, that's not why I'm saying it.
But YC is great. It took us two tries to get in, though. So it wasn't really that easy. So the first time we applied, so Strikingly started our first landing page was launched in 2011. But, you know, I was off. I was kind of like doing other stuff. And it took us like quite some time to get to, you know, a point that we applied for the first time for Y Combinator. But the product was still not that good. And the first time was that we didn't have traction. We only have like a couple of users. Actually, one user from Morocco was like in love with us, but that's it. A 17-year-old guy applying for NYU. I still remember. And he was in love with us, but that was about it. And we applied for YC. We got to the final round interview. We thought we got in. We kind of like did this interview, or whatever. But it was just like, you know, in the end, they didn't know that whether the market still have an opportunity. It's a crowded market for sure. And we didn't get in. But that was really important experience for us, that the fact that we did not get in made us have to make this decision of like whether we want to do this startup with no noise. Like you have to do this startup to solve the problem because you want to, not because you get into Y Combinator.
Yeah.
Not because of anything else.
Yeah.
So
we get a lot of applications of people like, man, I tell you what, like I'm like, are you full time committed? No. I work full time, but I mean if I get into the program, definitely gonna quit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's not how it works.
Right. That was exactly how we thought this we're gonna turn out. We're like, oh, we're gonna get into Y Combinator, so we're gonna quit everything and then we're just gonna move to the Valley. But then you know, the reality was that we didn't get in. So we were at this kind of like dinner table. We actually thought we got in, so we kind of celebrate with like all you can eat sushi. And then sushi was on the table and we're just like, we're not gonna eat it. So there was like a 20-minute silence and then we decided, you know what, let's just continue doing this. Like, you know, what's there to lose? I was like 23 at the time.
Good.
22 at the time. I was like, there's nothing to lose and we really want to solve this problem and just feel something is wrong if we don't kind of like stick together to create something. And really did feel something was wrong if we don't do that. There was three of us. So with that, we're like, okay, let's just do it. Let's do it full time. Let's see where it can take us. So we went to the Valley with like this one-way ticket. And, you know, we flew in and you have to make up all of this like excuse to get into like America, right? Like you're like, oh, I'm here to soul search. And then I was there doing the, and we live in this like small motel for like 2 days. And then we moved to like outer Richmond in San Francisco where you just get no sunshine at all. And it's just a really, really crappy place. And we stay there. We really work like really hard. Like every single day you wake up, you start like just coding, talking to users, whatever. And for 5 months, we didn't really think about anything else besides building a product, talking to users.
But and exercising.
I didn't.
Isn't that
well?
The
actually,
thing?
I did.
Isn't that the thing?
Yeah, I did. well, back then I didn't get into YC back then. But
right, true. Yes.
Right, okay, but I still exercise. I ran like a lot back then. I lost like something like 15 pounds in like the first 2 months
because like food's expensive in San Francisco.
Well, we didn't buy any. Well, for us, we basically just cook like a bowl of rice, like a huge like bowl of rice, and we buy a tons of sriracha. So we just like went with it. And that's it. Like we're just like, oh, there's a rice, there's a sauce.
Yeah.
Go. And in the first 2 months we like lost a lot of weight and it was like, you know, it was quite an experience. Then we applied for
startup.
It was very lean. Lean in the lean sense.
Yeah.
And we applied for YC again. The second time we applied, we already have like users. We already broke even at that time. And we're like just we're gonna do this regardless of whether we get into YC or not. And that sense of like determination and the fact that we're already committed to it was really apparent. And this time when we do the interview, when we actually present our idea, it's not just an idea, it's our life's work. We're presenting something that we're already working on and we're gonna make it work regardless of like whether you fund us or not. And looking back, I think that was like, you know, really the point that get us in. Mm-hmm. And the experience is just extraordinary when you're in YC. You know, their philosophy is that, you know, entrepreneurs are, you know, you guys should figure out what to do with your own startup. So they're there to help. But really, like, there was no, like, really set standard program all the time. It's like, you go there Tuesday night for dinner, and then there's, like, a killer speaker. They're basically just, like, telling you their experience. And then you have, like, office hours. It's really like campus, right? You go to office hours, you meet with them. And then you have all of this entrepreneurial kind of community that you can go to for advice, things they have done, and share your experience. And they organize sharing group sessions so that you can actually talk to each other and then bounce ideas, and that's it. But one thing they, you know, like we said, they do recommend us to do is like focus on nothing else but 2.5 things. Like the 2.5 things is like you code, you talk to users, and then you exercise. The half thing is the exercise. You need to hit 40% month over month growth for like the time that you're here at least. That's exactly what we did. And coming out of YC, we realized that was just fantastic. There was so much insight in like, you know, focus on the most fundamental thing and then grow your user base and, you know, your fundamental metrics with whatever resources you can get around. So that's our experience. And the community is something that you can take away for life. And it's just like you're plugging into that community, mm-hmm. and you're forever thankful for, you know, having, you know, this group of people who always support you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I think most accelerators should be, we strive for the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's just so few out there who do it properly.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Just the dedication right there, I think that speaks volumes about what it really means to love your idea, to get into it and to devote everything you have to it.
Yeah.
When the interview comes around, you're just like, listen, you can invest in us and we can join the program, or we're already doing it ourselves. Like that speaks volumes about how far you guys
whether
came.
I'm inside the room or I'm outside the room, I'm still going to be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, I was reading PG's article. Paul Graham, he wrote a bunch of articles on like essays on startups.
Yeah.
You know, you can be a con artist, which is like you can pretend that you're, you know, committed. But human beings are very sensitive with like this type of things. You can't really fake your your conviction that easily.
I agree. Like,
right.
Your brain's smarter than you think it is. Like you can't fool yourself forever. There's something in the back of your head that will always remind you and tell you that you're not being honest with yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then that translates to like you, like just people will pick it up.
Translates into your product, translates into your team.
Exactly.
Translates into the whole,
absolutely.
Exactly. So traction, product, all of this speaks loud about like, are you really committed? Or is it just in a business plan that you present to people and then you kind of like trying to feel good about yourself, then that's fundamentally different.
That's great advice.
It's awesome advice and fantastic.
So then you came back to China, heralded as kind of the first Chinese startup to get into Y Combinator.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. I have to admit.
And then, you know, it was interesting. Who did I meet from your team? Way back when we first came to Shanghai. And then
was it Dafeng or was it?
No.
Joyce.
I met Joyce and she was sourcing people. And I think you were still in Beijing.
Yeah.
And you're like, we're thinking about moving to Shanghai. I'm interested to know, because I think it's valuable for our listeners to kind of understand the difference between Beijing and Shanghai. Not one better than the other, but the difference.
Yeah.
And why did you guys choose to come to Shanghai?
Well, the straight up reason is that we weren't able to hire anybody in Beijing.
Competition?
Not really. I mean, we interviewed more than 200 people.
Wow.
But then we're not like, we didn't feel comfortable passing an offer to anyone. And there's a lot of things. And now thinking back, it's just like the identity of our product, who we are, what's the company we want to build. So in Beijing, you have like people who really focus on the local market. They're great at focusing on the local market. And the people who are like strong executor, they move really fast. They're ruthless. Really whatever it takes, right? But there are a few things that's also missing, right? Diversity. I don't feel that much in Beijing when we're there, especially for teams. It's, you know, very, very like kind of like, you know,
all from Dongbei, all from, you know,
that too, but like also just like people just all have the same kind of drive. They want to really like kind of like get rich or die trying, right? Like, or they want to really focus on the local market. They don't really value international market at all. Mm-hmm. There's not that many people from international background that comes back and like kind of like join those teams. Like our team right now has 30% people who's not Chinese. And like it's just something that you won't be able to get in Beijing. And they don't appreciate that. It's not just you won't be able to do it. It's that they don't appreciate that kind of environment. Mm. But that's exactly the type of environment we want to build. We're fundamentally a global product. We have users from everywhere.
Yeah.
You have to like appreciate the differences and the diversity. And also, you know, take care of people that's not just like, you know, somebody who speak your own language. You have to like kind of like take care of people that way. And you have to care. That's something that we weren't able to get in Beijing, and we weren't able to get that much of like people who care about creativeness either. That was interesting. You know, people in that industry, I guess, is also the pressure, the bubble and stuff. People care much more about success, you know, like fundraising. I want to like be under the spotlight, really like, you know, kind of like, you know, being covered, receive a lot of money and stuff, but not things like, oh, we want to be innovative. We want to have a, you know, innovative solution. We want to create a, carve out a different part of the market, not just like, you know, competing to get exactly the same thing. That was not something we got in Beijing. So that's why, I mean, but we landed in Beijing with the hope that we were able to build a team, you know, that we hope to build. So we sent Joyce here. We kind of like, again, the lean startup methodology, we started telling all of our applicants saying that, oh, we have already moved to Shanghai, with the fact that we actually were still in Beijing.
Yeah.
I just told them, oh yeah, what do you guys think? And we're able to actually get, you know, a couple of people that we really like in the first week that we landed here. And that was just different. And I don't think those people will actually be enjoying a lot of the startup in Beijing either. Or the lifestyle, I guess. But in Shanghai, it was just perfect. And for us, it's the same thing. There's like, you know, I also met people from UChicago here. We can go downstairs. There was like users. There are people, there are users who recognize me as, you know, when I'm wearing a striking t-shirt, and that's something that we didn't get as much in Beijing. So all of those definitely, like, you know, matters.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, we're based in Shanghai, but trying not to be biased to Shanghai. I think I'm hearing a lot of things. Like, I mean, you know, we had Jacob Cook from Web Presence Asia, and you know, he was saying he's so lonely in Beijing now, that all his friends have left. Everybody's gone.
Well,
I met with Nils Pill and Ryan Braley from Traintracks.io this morning. We're going to get them on the show soon, but they're up in Beijing. They are also trying to take a leadership role now, and one of their big things right now is trying to recreate some sort of freaking community up there, and they've created something like hashtag Bay Area with B-E-I, Bay Area, like Beijing, Bay Area. And they're trying, because now they're in the Chaoyang, because Chaoyang has become this place where it was all Haidian and Zhongguansun, which is in the northwest of Beijing, and it's this, and he's just like, nobody talks. There's no infrastructure. It's like all the old school people that we all used to know were kind of, most of them moved on. There's a big young group that's kind of come in. They're all just university people, and yet we have there's no arena, no community, no conversation, and now there's a big gap. And then, I mean, between the foreigners and the Chinese, it's just huge up there as well. And so they're actually, because they're up there and they want to be there, so they're now like actively trying to put something together.
Yeah, there's still a lot of movements happening in Beijing to help this. But Beijing is like the place to do certain types of startups, like we always say. Certain types of things are just best there.
It's still the startup hub. I mean, compared to Shanghai, I think Beijing definitely has like a lot more advantage. The money's there. The VCs are there. You know, a lot more startups are there.
Well, that's, I mean,
higher education.
Anybody with money in China knows that they need to be pretty close with government. You can't have one without the other. Okay, and that's where government is. So you know, we kind of have
it,
to,
and yeah, it's a good access line.
Yeah,
yeah, and also like if you are, you know, like in Shanghai, if you're like your startup is still not, you know, like there, PG also wrote this article about, you know, the cities and its ambition, right? And Shanghai is much more finance driven. In Beijing, like startup becomes one of the first tier citizen there, and that just feels great. But not for everyone. That's just, you know, unfortunately, that wasn't something for us. Our market was not there.
Yeah.
Our core user base, when, you know, when we look at our user base in China, most of our users are from Shanghai.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, our friends are here, and then we were able to hire here. It just, very particular to us.
That's a similar story. I mean, that's what Airbnb did too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when they were struggling, sat down with the mentors at YC, and one of the questions was like, well, where are your users? And they're like, oh, we're global. And they're like, no, where are most of your users? And they're like, everywhere. They're like, where's the largest number of users? And they're like, New York. They're like, why are you here? Go to New York.
Yeah.
That's where you need to be.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. And that changed everything because they went and started using their own product in New York and talking to landlords and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Okay. David, how do people, I mean, it's plug time. We got to, you know, we got to wrap this up now.
Sorry.
How do people get in touch? How do people find you? How do people start using Strikingly? Plug it away.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, well, Strikingly is strikingly.com. Go to strikingly.com. You can check out. We always, you know, welcome feedback and suggestions. And if you sign up, you still, the first email you receive still come from me.
Yeah.
And then you can contact me that way.
Yeah.
So nice. I guess like that's a hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. There's the go.
And you're always looking for great talent, I'm assuming.
Always. Yeah. I mean, we're always hiring all positions. So yeah, like we welcome people from all around the world.
Yeah. As most people, most great companies do, they're always welcoming great talent to come and talk to them and see if there's a fit and a position for them. And that's the same.
Definitely.
Dude, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you very much,
guys.
Continued
success.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And let it be known that David is also going to be speaking on March 31st at our 8x8 here in Shanghai.
Shameless plug time.
So yeah. We just roped him into it. So for those of you planning to come to the 8x8 conference in the China Accelerator Shanghai 8x8, you'll get to see David live in person talking. So thanks very much for coming on the show,
David.
Man.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Hi, before we go, I have one favor to ask of you guys. I'm here with Chi Leo, our producer, and what do we want, Chi?
Hi, guys. Please write to us at team@chinastartuppulse.com.
Yeah, because we really want to get your voice on the air. We will ask our next guest the questions that you write us. And who doesn't have any questions about China and startups, Chi?
Yeah, of course we do. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, so give us a ping at team@chinastartuppulse.com.